is Wednesday, September 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, an investigation says the missile that downed a Malaysian plane in 2014 came from Russia. Former Israeli President and Prime Minister Shimon Peres has died at the age of 93. And we find out what happened to the rock group AC/DC. It's all ahead. International investigators say a Malaysian airliner that crashed over eastern Ukraine in July 2014 was shot down by a surface-to-air missile that was transported into the country from Russia. All 298 people on board the Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 were killed. I'm joined now by reporter Henry Ridgewell in London. Henry, on what evidence is the finding based?
It's based on a whole range of forensic evidence that the investigators presented to reporters today in the Netherlands. First of all, this missile that they say shot down flight MH17, a Buk SA-11 missile, it's well known to many of the governments in the former Soviet states. It's still widely used in that part of the world. So there is credible military knowledge of this weapon, and using the remains, the fragments of the airliner, investigators were able to piece together where the missile hit the plane, to identify it by the shrapnel and the type of explosion that happened on the airliner, and then through that to trace the flight path of the missile and track that to the rough area in rebel-held Ukraine where it was fired from. Secondly, they were able to use satellite imagery, which showed the scorch marks in this field where they say that the missile was launched from. And that was backed up by several eyewitness accounts. They've managed to get anonymous and named eyewitness accounts from the scene. They've intercepted phone calls and social media accounts at the time, which many rebel commanders were boasting about shooting down another Ukrainian military plane, but then quickly turned to panic as they realized it was a civilian airliner. And lastly, they were able to use videos that were posted on YouTube and other video sources, geotagged videos, so they were able to identify exactly where they were taken, to trace the path of the missile launcher as it was taken from Russia to the launch site in Ukraine, and then back again to Russia after the missile had been launched, with the videos clearly showing two missiles missing from the launcher, one used to shoot down MH17, another used to shoot down, they think, a Ukrainian military transporter earlier that week in July 2014.
And what has been the Russian reaction to this investigation?
They have dismissed the findings. They say that the investigation is biased and politically motivated. They've long denied having any involvement in the downing of MH17, although they have changed their story several times. First of all, claiming that it was a Ukrainian jet fighter that shot down the airliner, then claiming to have evidence that it was a different type of missile that was fired from Ukrainian government territory that took down the plane. Then the maker of the SA-11 missile said it was their missile that shot down MH-17, but they said it was an old version that the Russians didn't have. And the latest development from the Russian side is they presented their own satellite and radar imagery earlier this week, claiming to dispute the findings and saying that that a SA-11 was shot from Ukrainian territory. So the Kremlin really working overtime to try to dispute the findings of this investigation, but it should be stated this isn't just a NATO or a Western investigation. This was a multinational team, including investigators from Malaysia, from Ukraine, Belgium, the Netherlands, and other countries looking into the accident.
Is it known who actually participated in the downing of the plane, and could those people be prosecuted?
Investigators say they've identified over 100 people who were involved in the transport of the missile itself or in the downing of the aircraft in other ways. They haven't named any of them yet in the report, but they do have some names, although prosecutors and lawyers for the victims' families are, of course, very keen to proceed with a criminal prosecution, but it's going to be a very difficult path for them, firstly because the prosecution would inevitably have to focus on the crew who shot the Buk missile, Nobody knows exactly where they are now, even if we do have some names. The investigators have some names as to who they are. They're probably back in Russia at the moment, and nobody knows their fate. There's speculation that they may not even be alive anymore. Secondly, if any prosecutions wanted to prosecute Russian citizens, it would have to involve the cooperation of Russia to extradite those people. And given that they deny any involvement, and given the political capital that they've invested in denying any involvement, it's pretty clear that they would resist any extradition attempts. I think we'll see attempts by the victims' families to take this further forward, and perhaps by the Dutch government and the Malaysian government, but whether that will succeed is far from certain.
Thanks very much, Henry. That's Henry Ridgewell reporting from London. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's the reaction to this on social media?
Well, there's a lot of reaction about this MH17 findings, and a lot of people wondering when those charges might be brought that the investigation team mentioned and who might be charged. So it's revived a lot of the anger that people felt after the plane was shot down, and I expect that to continue until those charges are eventually brought, and even through that point. The other big trending story today is the death of Shimon Peres, the former Israeli president, dying at age 93. So we have a lot of U.S. leaders who have taken to social media to express their condolences. Among them, we have President Obama saying that the light has gone out, but the hope he gave us will burn forever. Bill Clinton saying that Hillary and I have lost a true and treasured friend. And Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives Paul Ryan tweeting out that Shimon Peres was a gift to the country that he helped to establish and lead. So lots of praise from those U.S. political leaders. But that praise isn't universal. There are some people who are saying, well, he has a mixed legacy. We didn't see him as a peacemaker. We saw him as someone who provoked people. So there is some debate on that. But among U.S. Political leaders, by and large, a lot of praise and condolence for his passing. And the Israeli Foreign Ministry actually announced that President Obama, Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton will all be going over to Israel on Friday for the funeral. So we'll see. I'm sure that'll spark some social media conversations. And speaking of Hillary Clinton and then also Donald Trump, the two candidates in our presidential election, some new stats released from Twitter about the conversations around the first debate on Monday night. Perhaps not surprising, the top three tweeted moments all had to do with Donald Trump, number one being that he's saying he has a good temperament. And part of those top three moments led about two-thirds of all Twitter conversations to be about Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. He bested her on the number of Twitter conversations, 62% to 38%.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. The chief of the UN says Aleppo hospital strikes are war crimes. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump look for new support in battleground election states. Japan's naval chief rules out a joint U.S. Freedom of Navigation patrols. And South Sudan condemns Machar's threats of war. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of astronomers using two of the world's most powerful ground-based telescopes have discovered an enormous galaxy that's only 0.01% visible. The remaining 99.9% is made up of dark matter. Dark matter, a so far unknown type of matter, is thought to make up about 20% of the observable universe. The faint galaxy is called Dragonfly 44. It's located within the Coma Cluster, about 321 million light-years from Earth, and is nearly 70,000 light-years across. To make their discovery, the astronomers used the W.M. Keck Observatory and the Gemini North Telescope, which are both located on Mauna Kea in Hawaii. A spectrograph, a device that splits light into separate wavelengths, was installed to help astronomers calculate the amount of dark matter in the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about the fate of the rock group AC/DC. The The former president and prime minister of Israel, Shimon Peres, died Wednesday at the age of 93 after suffering a stroke. Israel's foreign ministry said President Barack Obama and Pope Francis will be among the world's dignitaries who plan to attend the funeral. Peres' son, Shemi Peres, read a statement at the Tel Aviv hospital where his father passed away.
Today, with deep sorrow, we bid farewell to our beloved father, the ninth president of Israel, Shimon Peres. He was one of the founding fathers of the state of Israel and served our people before we even had a country of our own. He worked tirelessly for Israel from the very first day of the state to the last day of his life. Our father's legacy has always been the future. Look to tomorrow. He taught us, build Israel's future with courage and with wisdom, and always continue to strive for peace. We were privileged to have been part of his private family, but today we sense that the entire nation of Israel and the global community mourn this great loss. We share this pain together.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a former political rival, issued a statement expressing his deep personal grief at Peres' passing.
We grieve today for the passing of our dear and beloved Shimon Peres. Shimon devoted his life to our nation and to the pursuit of peace. He set his gaze on the future. He did so much to protect our people. He worked to his last days for peace and a better future for all. As Israel's president, Shimon did so much to unite the nation, and the nation loved him for it.
President Obama called Peres as one of the few people who helped change the course of human history and never gave up on the possibility of peace. Peres was co-recipient of the 1994 Nobel Peace Prize for seeking peace with the Palestinians. Peres's body is to lie in state in the Israeli Knesset Thursday before burial at the country's National Cemetery in Jerusalem on Friday. Well, Shimon Peres interacted many times with officials of the United States. In a VOA interview, he spoke about the U.S.
United States is really concerned about every problem all over the globe. In fact, there is no other power, superpower, that has the capacity or the inclination to care for other people and cook and to try and pacify the world and bring it to real democracy.
My colleague Natasha Movgovaya from VOA's Russian service joins us now. Well, Natasha, when you interviewed Peres, when did you last interview him?
Last I interviewed him about 2 years ago when he was basically as energetic as always. He was always the coolest guy in the room. What was interesting, I interviewed him several times over the years, and each time I asked him about, about the change in his political views, etc., he said, I didn't change, it's just the time put things in perspective. So he basically says that he was always wise enough to see the bigger picture and forcing basically others also to see this big perspective and inspire them to follow.
Well, and he remained engaged in world affairs until very late in his life.
I think it was amazing to see him. He was, his staff often was more tired than he was. He was fascinated always with the new technology. He was pushing for change. He was basically shaming people, twice less his age, that they're not, that they're not open enough to accept a new vision. And by the way, despite all the turbulence and despite some pessimistic developments at times in the Middle East, he was convinced, all the time that his vision for the new Middle East will be fulfilled. He said, maybe I was wrong in the dates, but it's inevitable. It will come. The openness will come. The cooperation will come. The technology will come. The youth will want to live a better life. And I think it was one of his biggest accomplishments that in this time of, partial darkness sometimes, he was just, keeping his eyes on this very optimistic vision and making many people to believe in it.
Well, and we heard from that interview, he clearly had warm feelings towards the United States.
And I think the United States had very warm feelings towards him. Actually, you know, for many Israelis, he was sort of like in Gorbachev in Russia, for example, that people were very critical towards him. Those, for example, who thought that he has some pose, that he's kind of has this grandeur that is not fitting to a small country. But he was larger than life. I mean, I think many people admitted it. He was so happy when, you know, people in Mauritius were just chanting Shimon Peres, that they recognize him, because I think his vision basically crossed the borders. And certainly he admitted, he also had a great sense of humor, that since he became a president and not prime minister, he was welcomed in many more places and many more people are willing to say yes to him, both in Israel and in other parts of the world. Because in Israel, when you're prime minister, you're entangled in this very aggressive politics, exchange of punches, etc. When you're president, you're this symbolic figure, and, you know, having spent almost 70 years in active political life since Ben Gurion, who took him basically as sort of a kid, I think he enjoyed every moment of, you know, of his very rich, full, active life.
All right. Thanks very much. That's VOA's Natasha Mozgoveya of our Russian service. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
My name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Well, it's inevitable. Our favorite music artists and groups evolve as they age. And it's true for one of rock and roll's enduring bands from the 1970s, as International Edition's Jim Stevenson is joined by VOA Top 20 host Ray McDonald to explain.
You can file this one under the category of time marches on. Stuff happens. And stuff has been happening to AC/DC over the past 2 years. This band is down to one original member. That's guitarist Angus Young. On Tuesday, their bass player Cliff Williams gave his final performance with AC/DC in Philadelphia. Cliff is 66. He says he just spends more time with his family. He wants to get off that endless treadmill of recording and touring. In 2014, Angus Young's brother, guitarist Malcolm Young, left the band after he was diagnosed with dementia. AC/DC's drummer Phil Rudd is not in the band anymore due to a drug conviction. Their singer, Brian Johnson, is battling hearing loss, although Brian does admit he loves racing cars, and he says the blame might be on his cars rather than his bandmates. In any event, Brian's not on the tour. Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses was his replacement on this tour. For those who don't know, AC/DC is one of the world's biggest rock bands. They formed in Australia in 1973. They've been making albums since 1975. And they've sold more than 200 million records worldwide. These guys are major league rock stars. They entered the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2003. So the possibility of AC/DC vanishing, it's kind of a big deal. Although that might not happen. Angus Young, the sole remaining original member, posted a video this week. He says music is his world, And even at the age of 61, he still has stamina. He says he paces himself. And he still has the desire to make music. So it doesn't sound like Angus is ready to hang it up, although what this means for AC/DC proper remains very much to be seen.
Without so many of the core members, if you will, we've seen this with a lot of the 60s singing groups, where some of the original members are no longer with us for one reason or another, and you go to a show and you see maybe one or two, and the rest are all replacements.
When is a group not a group? Back in the 80s, Pink Floyd had a big split when Roger Waters left, but they continued as Pink Floyd for many years. The band Yes has no original members anymore. The one remaining original member, Chris Squire, passed away. Some of the members will be reforming under a new name. So, it's just a continual process of change.
Always classic in our book is Ray McDonald. He's the host of our Top 20 Countdown. You'll find it every week. It's VOA 1 each Thursday.
And you can catch me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits.
Love to follow your stream. Ray, thanks so much.
You got it, Jim.
That is the music of AC/DC, and that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United Nations estimates that there are currently more than 65 million people who have been forcibly displaced from their homes. Some 21 million of them have fled across international borders, while the rest are displaced within their own country but cannot return home. It is no exaggeration to say that this has become a global humanitarian crisis, in some places a catastrophe, as Secretary of State John Kerry said in a speech in New York on September 19th at the UN General Assembly high-level meeting on refugees and migrants.
It is in the world's singular interests, best interests, and it is right to ensure that people who desperately need a new home, whether in or beyond the boundaries of their own country, can actually find a place to live in safety with food, medicine, school, and a time to plan for what comes next. The task of providing such a refuge falls most heavily on those states that are directly embroiled in strife, their neighbors, and on the nations along nearby exit corridors. But the responsibility to assist is shared by all. So we have to do our part to try to end wars, to oppose violent extremism, to respect human rights, and to support policies that humanely and effectively manage the flow of people who are on the move.
The UN General Assembly approved the New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants, a non-binding document meant to standardize the response to refugee situations, to provide better education prospects for children, and to improve working opportunities for refugees. The world knows what it must do to respond effectively to the massive challenge that we face, said Secretary of State Kerry. Noting that the United States is proud to be the world's largest donor of humanitarian assistance and refugee relief, he said that the gap between the funds that we have and the funds that we need remains enormous. We are determined to work with all of you to create more opportunities for refugees, to provide more fully for the special needs of women, children, and people in danger of persecution, and to furnish additional help to countries that are on the front lines of humanitarian crises. To these ends and more, we ask your support and we pledge our own continued best efforts.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.